The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is currently en route to Washington. This will be his third meeting with Trump since Trump's election, more than anyone else. There are hopes that the visit could result in the announcement of a ceasefire in Gaza, as Trump said he believes there will be a deal this week. But the negotiators in Doha between Hamas, the Palestinians and the Israelis were unable to reach a breakthrough yesterday in their first round discussions. So what can we expect from today's talks? Joining us now, it's a pleasure to welcome to the Pat Kenny Show, Greg Karlstrom, Middle East correspondent for The Economist. Greg, what is your expectation today?
I think we are closer to a ceasefire than we've been at any point since March, since the previous one collapsed. But I don't expect that there's going to be a major breakthrough today. As you said, there wasn't progress in this most recent round of talks in Qatar. There are a few reservations that Hamas came back with after the most recent proposal was put on the table over the weekend. They have some concerns about what the deal says about humanitarian aid during the truce, about the extent of Israel's withdrawal during the truce, and then guarantees about whether or not this is going to become a permanent end to the war. So Hamas and Israel still have to negotiate a bit on those points. That might take some time. I think unlikely that there's a deal today, but it could happen by the end of Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit to Washington on Thursday.
Okay, and sort of getting into the weeds of the details a bit, where are we now with the remaining hostages?
So in this agreement, over a period of 60 days, about half of the remaining hostages would be released. There are 10 living hostages who are supposed to be freed in this deal, and then the remains of 18 dead hostages would be handed over as well. There are about 50 or so in total still in captivity, so this would be slightly more than half of the total. And it would be spaced out over almost the entirety of the 60-day agreement. So on the first day, Hamas would release a fairly large batch of the living hostages, but several of the living hostages wouldn't be freed until close to the end of the 60-day period.
And are Hamas likely to agree to that?
The hostage release part of it, yes. I mean, they have agreed to that already. The issues on their side have to do, again, with aid as one of them. They want to return to the old system in which the United Nations was responsible for bringing aid into Gaza and then distributing it. The Israelis are insisting on staying with this so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which has largely been a fiasco since it started a month and a half ago. You've had almost daily incidents of Palestinians being killed while trying to access aid from this foundation. But Israel is insisting on letting it continue its work as part of the agreement. So those are the sorts of things that they're still needing to negotiate in Doha.
It seems Israel just don't get the worldwide revulsion at, you know, what's happening. Like we had on the program last week, UNICEF's global spokesperson representing 170 NGOs saying, you know, this kind of random shootings, they've moved from sort of 400 to 4 sites for feeding stations, and that is just absolutely horrific. I mean, surely this is causing Israel a huge loss of public support.
It is. I think you're right that for some reason is not sort of getting through to the Israeli government. I mean, these daily shootings outside the aid hubs, they obviously are getting a lot of attention around the world, not so much in Israel, but everywhere else in the world. And this is something that humanitarian groups had predicted would happen, had warned would happen. If you set up an aid distribution mechanism where there are only 3 or 4 places each day where 2 million Palestinians have to go and collect food, you're going to end up with large crowds. It's going to be impossible to control the overcrowding. And this is happening in the middle of a war zone. So, you know, when you talk to the UN back in April, early May, when this foundation was being set up, they anticipated that exactly this sort of thing was going to happen. Israel ignored those concerns, and here we are.
And what, you know, Hamas has been really, really sort of destructured or, you know, just ripped apart. What's replacing Hamas on the ground? We hear of these sort of gangs and so on. What is the situation on the ground post Hamas's previous structures that were there?
I think what's replacing them is nothing in many areas. You've had 21 months now where Israel has refused to talk about the so-called day after the war. Who might govern Gaza? Could the Palestinian Authority come back and play a role, or, you know, some other governing body? Israel has not wanted to have that conversation. So you have ended up with a security vacuum in Gaza. Hamas has been badly battered during the war. It's also, I think, withdrawn from parts of Gaza because it's afraid of being targeted, and it's gone underground, both literally and figuratively. And so you've ended up with a situation where armed gangs, you know, have control in bits of the territory. But then there's also just anarchy. You talk to people who have been to some of these food distribution hubs, and they tell stories of ordinary people, you know, arming themselves with knives to try to fend off looters on their way to or from the aid hubs. There are no police. There are no authorities. Really, no one is in control in parts of Gaza.
How would you categorize the Trump administration's relationship with Israel? So we get that, you know, they support them. We get that they did the business in terms of the bunker busters in Iran. And I suppose what Trump was putting out there was, unlike Biden, he could control the Israeli cabinet with its right-wing members and so on and get them to come into line and making them amenable to reason. Is that the relationship, or is Netanyahu in control of the relationship?
We'll find out in a few hours. The relationship has changed, I think, quite a bit throughout the course of Trump's presidency. If you go back to February, to the first meeting that he had with Netanyahu, that was during the previous ceasefire, and Israel was meant to be negotiating with Hamas about how to make that ceasefire permanent. So going into that White House meeting in February, a lot of people expected Trump was going to put pressure on the Israelis and tell them, you need to conclude these talks and make the deal permanent. Instead, Trump got up next to Netanyahu in the White House and announced his plan to depopulate Gaza and turn it into a beach resort. And that was the end of American pressure to preserve the ceasefire. So we don't know. Going into this meeting today, there are people close to the administration who say, you know, after the war in Iran, after America's support for Israel in Iran, Trump now wants to pivot away from war, and he wants to start making regional deals, you know, end the war in Gaza, perhaps talk about an Israeli-Saudi normalization deal. He wants to be focused on diplomacy. But we heard that sort of thing back in February, and Trump surprised everyone. So we'll see.
Okay. And if you were to call it, would you think there will be a deal or not?
I think there will be a deal in the next few days. I think both Israel and Hamas, for now, have an interest in halting the war, at least temporarily. The question is whether Trump will pressure Netanyahu to end the war permanently, whether he's going to keep the pressure on the Israelis for the next 2 months, and that remains to be seen.
Greg Karlstrom, Middle East correspondent with The Economist, thank you indeed for that analysis of what we can expect in Washington between now and Thursday. Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.